Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time. Discussing the human condition. Providing a sounding board for mental health issues. And making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber. To Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media. Google Plus, Mainstream Mental Health. Instagram, at Mainstream Mental Health. Twitter, at Mainstream MENTL. And search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.
Welcome to Mental Health Perspectives with your host, Dr. John Huber and Ms. Kristen Sonata Walker. Know more about Dr. Huber by going to his website at mainstreammentalhealth.org. Know more about Ms. Walker by going to her site at mentalhealthnewsradio.com. Dr. Huber, Ms. Walker, happy Friday to you both. Hope you are both doing unbelievable.
Amazing.
Incredible. I'm just coming up with an A word, but I like incredible.
Excellent. Well, this week in the country, the world is, well, at least most of the country is focused on the Supreme Court hearing, trying to see if they're going to confirm the gentleman, Kavanaugh, which probably will have happened by the time we air the show. But, Dr. Huber, from your perspective, if you're observing the dialogue back and forth, body language-wise, do you feel or see that a number of people are telling the truth or not telling the truth? What do you read during these hearings as far as body language, and what can we learn? Are there any mental health lessons we can learn from this hearing?
Well, I see a lot of things going on. I think both individuals are, at least they believe they're telling the truth. I don't think either one of them feels they're lying, and that can happen for a lot of different reasons. I've been involved in court cases. For example, I had a young lady who was sexually assaulted by a person, and in a lineup, she labeled a 16-year-old neighbor boy as the person who did it. He ended up going to jail for that based only on her eyewitness testimony. 16 years later, they ran the DNA test from the DNA samples, and it wasn't the young man. And so he was 32 years old when he got out of jail. And to this day, that woman still believes it was him because in her mind, that's the image she saw. And we replace things in our memory so quickly that I believe she really feels he's still the perpetrator, but the DNA evidence does not support that. And unfortunately, that young man didn't finish high school, you know, and he was a high BA student, and his life has been totally ruined from that. That being said, you know, over 90% of all the wrongful incarcerations are based off of eyewitness testimony, people who believe to be reporting exactly what they feel they saw. Memory is fallible. And the fact that there's a lot of holes in her story doesn't corroborate that this is a completely accurate picture. However, like I said before, she believes this. I don't think she's lying. I don't think he's lying. You know, the fact that he basically came out and said he didn't lose his virginity until he was in college, you know, it's possible he wasn't anywhere near those parties. Now, what do we do when we're in high school and all that? We over-exaggerate who we are. We try to be cool, all this kind of stuff. So he makes all these statements. It's a he said, she said. I have real problems with the whole thing. This coming out in therapy in 2012, there are legal issues when it comes to disclosing information to your therapist about, you know, being assaulted as a child, and requirements for reporting to the state. If the therapist really believed it, where are those reports? I have issues with all of the stuff, both sides. So I think they both believe they're telling the truth. I think an investigation is not going to find out anything more than just interviewing both of them, because nothing's there. Nothing, you know, both of them have witnesses that are questionable at best. I don't think either one of them, though, is lying. That's the problem.
That's amazing. And what about you, Ms. Walker? If you're observing the body language, observing the dialogue between these two, what can we learn from it, and what do you gauge?
Well, yeah, and I'm not going to say, you know, one way or the other of who I believe is lying or not. What I look at is from a very different perspective. Is what was an interesting study for me was to see how it's still the dynamics of how, or the confines of being a female as opposed to a male in society, was on display. And I'm not saying, you know, that's right or wrong, but it was interesting to me that she had to be so composed, because women are not allowed to emote. Otherwise, we're told we're hysterical, crazy, whatever. And that was so on display. And he can be emotional and bombastic and all these things, and it's okay for him to do that. He has the freedom to do that. And we still don't, as women. So that was really interesting to witness that going on. And, you know, I'm putting this out there, I don't care if anyone disagrees with me, I don't think we need another white male in this kind of a position. I just don't. I mean, let's get some color in there. Let's get some women in there. Let's, you know, I just don't believe that we do. And if there's a questionable, you know, past, then that's, I absolutely believe that there should be due process around, you know, investigating those things. But I also totally agree that eyewitness testimony is often false. I've seen it happen many times, even in my own family, where people have been accused of horrendous things that came out in therapy, and my own grandmother was investigated for child abuse, and she was in her 80s or 70s or something when this happened, and it actually didn't happen, but it was remembered in therapy as something that did. So,
oh, wow.
It's really, you know, it's very difficult, but so I don't like jumping on the bandwagon of she's right and he's wrong, da 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 da, but,
right.
You know. It was more of a character study or a study of how society still works. That was interesting to me.
Well, and at the same time, my concern is, you know, we had a great victory for women this week when that powerful comedic personality, you know, was made to pay the piper, you know, and I am concerned that this is going to set that back, you know, if she somehow is maligned, because like I said, I don't think either one of them believes they're lying. I don't think either one of them in their mind is lying. I think what's happened is there's memory problems. And yeah.
How do you find a truth when you have two people that believe the same thing? I mean, how do you generally get to that? Do you find it interesting? What do you do when you have two people that actually believe the same thing?
You know, she talks about taking a lie detector test. Lie detector tests measure physiological response. It's too easy to manipulate. There was a study done, I believe, around 2000 by Congress, and the research says that, you know, that it is not reliable, and you should not use that for serious matters. So we have a truth machine, and it's called a jury and a judge, and if they really have that issue out there, that's where it should be held. And you let a jury and or a judge sit there and listen to all stories. I think Kristen is right. If it's really going down to that, why aren't we there? That's where it should be. And there's no statute of limitations, I understand, for this action in the state it occurred. So it goes back to being a state issue and not a federal issue, which somehow is, I think, lessening the likelihood that the state will ever look at it, because it's been thrown into this situation, and possibly because it's run majority by men.
Well, you know, Dr. Huber brought up an excellent point this week. You know, a well-known comedian. We'll just have to say it, Bill Cosby. I mean, because he was, quote-unquote, America's dad. No, America's dad. Meanwhile, he's classified as a violent sexual predator, currently serving 3 to 10 years. Decision of sentencing probably shocked a lot of people, the fact that he's in prison right now. So I'd like to ask you, Dr. Huber, from your perspective, do you think that the cast members from The Cosby Show probably should start seeking mental health services, because maybe Cosby rubbed off on them in a way that they're not aware of? Maybe the fact that he, you know, was such a, appeared to be such a nice person on the outside, yet was this, can only describe as an evil person behind the scenes. Do you think that when people who are pretending to be nice and yet are evil are actually rubbing off on people around them in a very negative way, that he could actually be damaging or have damaged people around his life in a subconscious, subliminal way?
I think the concern is that if they only know him as that peaceful, nice, happy person, are they going to keep that part that they learned from that man, or are they going to start focusing on the bad part of the person? And my suggestion to them is, if they start having issues, start questioning, you know, their self based on some of the things that he taught them through his overt actions that the society saw, that the public saw, then they should go seek help at that point. Otherwise, take the lessons that you learned from him that are valuable, because there really were some really good lessons that he was trying to teach, all the way back to Fat Albert. You know, so we should focus on that side. And if we start questioning who we are because he was a fraud, it doesn't mean we're a fraud also. And that's when you need to go talk to a therapist. Otherwise, I think take the lessons you learned from him. Be thankful that somebody was able to get that message across to you, and move forward and do your best to fight the evil that we saw.
Okay. And what about you, Ms. Walker? What do you think is some of the psychological ramifications of the people who work with Bill Cosby? Do you think that there's, and even the people who watch the show? I mean, this guy, millions of people turn to him. I wonder if they could be damaged, because when you see somebody that you love and respect and see them fall, and not just, you know, fall on hard times, but actually turn out to be completely who they're not, who say they're not. I wonder if there's a psychological damage from that.
Yeah, there is. I mean, there absolutely is. There was damage done at the time too, by just people knowing that, you know, this kind of stuff was going on and nothing was being done. I mean, it's living in a state of cognitive dissonance, and that's been going on forever. So it's not like this is new damage. It's more that the damage is on public display now. We can talk about it. It's out there. So I always, you know, caution people, oh, I'm, you know, upset about this now. Well, I'm glad you're aware of it now, and you might be having some mental health struggles because you're openly able to talk about it now. But those issues were there. I mean, it's like talking about Harvey Weinstein. Those issues were going on for a long time. People just couldn't talk about it. So, sometimes I think when you're around someone like that, I call it fleas and ticks. If you're in a relationship with someone like that, but it would be his wife, it would be his kids, it would be people that are directly impacted by him when he's not. People like that are really good at putting a public persona out there, even at work, of, you know, that's completely different than what goes on behind closed doors. The people that had to deal with him behind closed doors are the ones that I would be worried about severe mental health issues and things maybe rubbing off on them. Those are the people that I would be, you know, more concerned about.
Got it. And a story that came out this week is that a lot of colleges, apparently they're teaching what toxic masculinity is. They're describing, you know, what is healthy masculinity, what is toxic masculinity. And what I would like to ask you both, we'll start with you, Ms. Walker, on this, is what are two signs that you see as healthy masculinity and healthy femininity, and what are two examples that you see in our society where toxic masculinity, whether they are doing it directly or not, are perpetuating upon people? Because it seems like we have a really strange society that they see a lot of hypocrisies where they say one thing and they do another. So what are two examples of positive and negative masculinity and femininity from your perspective?
Are you starting with me?
Yes.
Okay. So healthy masculinity. I'm surrounded by them. So this, and I wasn't for a long time. So for me, it's when I speak about something that did in fact happen to me as a child that was abusive or so on, they listen. They are concerned. They're maybe even a little extra careful with me about certain things or how they approach certain things because they understand my background. That's a sign of healthy masculinity and healthy femininity. So there's one in a column for two things there. You wanted two toxic and two healthy?
Yeah, or as many as you wanted to offer, because they keep on talking about toxic masculinity in colleges, and I almost find it interesting that they would want to teach us because there are so many other things in an atmosphere at a college that are toxic. So it's
right.
I almost feel sometimes it's like it's the addict trying to teach other people, you know, the virtue of charity when they don't realize that they're an addict. Like, you know, I think it's, I don't know.
Gotcha. Well, I think there's toxic femininity too, for goodness sake. So I feel like if you're going to teach about toxic masculinity and we're talking about being a fairer society, then you need to also do a class on toxic femininity. I mean, you know, it shouldn't just be toxic masculinity. So toxic masculinity, okay, that you, it's just your right to touch women anywhere on their body, and that's just your right. It's your right to, you know, have these parties and get wasted and do whatever you want, you know, in terms of hazing people, men and women, also sexual acts, you know, all those things. That's all toxic behavior. And you know, women do those things too on college campuses. So my thought about those kinds of things are, let's really be a fair society. And there are toxic things about both sexes. Let's talk about all of it, not just make it one-sided. But to me, it seems like we are repeating some patterns of the past where we do horrible things to people, and then we are contrite, and then we go back and try to, you know, do good and say we're sorry, but with a pendulum is swinging so far to the other side that, you know, people get embroiled in things that they don't deserve to be because we're not bringing fairness to the table. And I'd hate to see that happen again where it's been all male focused, which has been totally unfair, but now let's swing to the side and make it female. And men are, you know, now going to be abused in that kind of an environment as payback for what happened to us. And that's not going to work either. So if we can move forward, you know, with us covering both sides of the fence, to me, that would be a good way to go.
Excellent. That's a great response. And Dr. Huber, what about your perspective? How do you feel? What do you see as toxic masculinity and toxic femininity on college campuses?
Well, I see what Kristen is saying, and I agree with her because, you know, we don't necessarily know what the consequences of doing that without looking at the whole picture, like she said, without looking at toxic feminism. I sit back and think, you know, this society is so good at telling people what they do wrong, but they're not very good at telling people what they're doing right. And if they really want to do something, they need to teach what it is to be a good, strong, masculine man and what it is to be a good, strong, feminine woman, or just how about being a good human being, period, across the board.
Right.
You know, when I get derated for holding the door open for a woman because I'm somehow minimizing her, but the next woman gets mad at me when I don't, I'm confused.
Right.
And it's real easy to tell people how wrong they are, but it's very hard to tell people what they're doing right, because that's the struggle right there. Nobody's willing to stick their neck out and say, this is appropriate, this is not appropriate, until we get to some extreme measure, which we all know is wrong, such as the Cosby situation. You know,
right.
That we know is wrong. And there's no doubt. I don't ever want any person, male or female, to be in that situation. And they should stand up on a mountain and yell it to everybody and have all the police and the FBI going after those people who do that. But what's the right behavior we should be doing? And we don't outline that. We just assume people know that. And what's right by one person is not right by the other person. So you want me to go through and list things? I think the qualities of being a decent human being are what's important, that you love and respect each other and you teach and treat those people like you expect to be treated, period. And I think mankind would be in a lot better place. People wouldn't be taking advantage of each other because they would start thinking, wait a minute, you know, if I was hurting, if I was weak, if I was vulnerable, would I want somebody to take advantage of me? And we do it across the board. I mean, the main technique for interrogation is called the Reed technique. And the whole thing is these guys are looking for your weakness so they can work it. And they're allowed to do things like blatantly lie to the accused in that interrogation room to say they have evidence that they don't have. And if you got somebody who's fragile, that's why we get false confessions. Okay, you've already wrapped it up. I'm better off, you know, admitting to it and facing my consequences than hiding from it. And they want it all to be over, and they acquiesce, and it's wrong. It doesn't matter whether it's, like I said, it's the police, the government, or somebody holding the door for somebody else. The fact that I hold doors for men and women doesn't seem to catch anybody's attention until I make somebody mad, and then you're doing this because I'm a woman. And I'm like, no, I'm doing it because you're a human being and I want to help you. Doesn't cross their mind, and it becomes tragic. And we need to start focusing on what we do right in this world.
Completely agree. Well said, Dr. Huber. So we just have time for one more story. And as always, we'd like to leave mental health perspectives on a positive note. So we have all these challenges. The fire challenge, the hold your breath challenge, the jump off a bridge and get selfie challenge. I don't know, all these new challenges. Well, Six Flags Great Adventure, they've come up with a new challenge. It's called the Coffin Challenge. And what they want to do is that they're seeking people to go inside a closed coffin for 30 hours. And if they are successful, they win two 2009 Golden Season passes to the theme park. And they get a $300 prize. So, Dr. Cooper, from your perspective, do you think that this challenge will probably cause some mental duress for people who take it? And if you have a friend that wants to take the challenge, do you recommend that they make an appointment with you right away?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think this is bad call on Disney. If this is really what they're, I have not heard of this.
Coffin challenge, really. Yeah, they want you to get locked in a coffin for 30 hours.
It only 36 hours of sleep deprivation, you start hallucinating. You go into a coffin for 30 hours, and, you know, the kind of people who are going to take that risk are people who probably have some distorted sense of reality in the first place. If you're saying, hey, we'll do that, you do that for $1 million, that's one thing. Two season passes at $300, you got something seriously wrong with you. So, yeah, you need to come see me. There's some serious issues that can happen when you isolate in darkness and restricted movement. Come schedule an appointment. I'll make time for you.
Excellent. How are you, Ms. Walker?
I mean, seriously, this is such a bad idea. Okay, the people that would do it for that little are not people that you want having season passes at a theme park. I mean, seriously, I thought you were going to say $3 million, and then I was
wouldn't I do that?
I was like, oh, well, I would do that for this network.
The cost of the admission ticket.
But for $300, I mean, I'd think about it. I wouldn't do it because who has time to spend 30 hours in a coffin? But, you know, if it was like $3 million, do I have the Zen stamina to be able to do that? And then I'd put it all towards my network and getting more people on the air that are trying to help other people. I would at least pause to think about it. But for $300 and season passes, absolutely not.
Well, I know we didn't discuss this ahead of time, but I want to throw a challenge out to the listeners. That is called the Mainstream Mental Health Challenge. And that is, you take this show, share it with people, share it with as many people as you can, let them know that this is a show where they can learn and grow and get some interesting perspectives. And what's really wonderful about that challenge is there's no chance of you going on fire. There's no chance of you going viral. There's no chance that anything bad's going to happen. It's only going to be positive. It's a positive challenge.
Right.
So it's going to stand out. And
you don't need a coffin.
Yeah. You don't have to go to a coffin. And that concludes today's edition of Mental Health Perspectives. A phenomenal host, Dr. John Huber. Learn more about him by going to his website at mainstreammentalhealth.org. And Ms. Kristen Sonata Walker. Learn more about her by going to her website at everythingehr.com or mentalhealthnewsradio.com. Ms. Walker, Dr. Huber, great honor to have you with us, and we will see everyone back here next week.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Because